whatever changes, whatever changes have already been made, and they have been numerous, from Latin to the vernacular, from one canon to, well, four major canons besides several others, from all kinds of saints that we had in the liturgical calendar to just a sprinkling of saints. By the way, the saints have not been decanonized. Christopher is still a saint. Any other doubts you may have had? Please? Yeah, there. In other words, the church has made many changes. They are the level of custom. Now here again, it is the church's right and hers alone to determine what belongs to revelation, what belongs to revelation communicated, and what belongs to custom. And it is not, therefore, for example, for a priest to change the words of institution. At Mass, when he offers Mass, his duty is to follow the directives of the Church. I know how many of you may have heard, but in some places, people tell me, they call me up sometimes from another state. Today at Mass, I out loud heard the priest in the words of consecration for all men, and he would add, and women. That's wrong. No private individual has a right to determine things that belong to the substance of the faith and change on their private authority. In any case, I think a large part of the confusion of the church today arises from the fact, first, that many people have not realized that as far as God's revealed truth goes, that's finished. There is not what is called, in some circles, continuing revelation. There isn't. Where the Holy Spirit, as they think, is now enlightening them to know things that were hidden before from all eternity. And I, John Smith, now have had a revelation on the subject. No, I haven't. I've just had a brainstorm. Or maybe a bad headache. That revelation is finished. Secondly, that this revelation is to be communicated in these various ways that we've described, and that the church alone has the right to recognize, to preserve, to explain, to coordinate, to defend. What's the other D?
Develop.
And to judge. And finally, the church alone has the right to distinguish between changeable custom. Take, for example, the Eucharistic fast. I was in Rome with one of my fellow Jesuits who had spent 4.5 years in Dachau in the concentration camp, one of the few survivors. His job was taking the bodies after they had been gassed to the furnace for 4.5 years, tens of thousands of bodies. Well, he survived and kept sane after all of that. But the diet was so bad that he contracted all kinds of, as you would expect, digestive sicknesses. We were in Rome together as a priest. He had to take, it was, I think, every 4 hours, some antibiotic. And in order to take that pill, he had to get a special rescript from the Holy See, personally allowing him to offer Mass after he had taken that medication without which he couldn't survive. That was the law. Remember? Strict as can be. That belongs in category number 3. All right? Who alone can decide what is a changeable custom? In fact, we know it's a changeable custom once the Church tells us it's a changeable custom. But to have that kind of simple faith, believe me, takes a lot of humility. And one of the problems in the modern world, and I speak as one who has gone through the mill myself, so many once-believing Catholics have become so educated, their reason is so developed, their critical faculties have been so sharpened, that when it comes to humbly and simply, like a child, accept the Church's teaching, is it any wonder some people find it hard? I know what it means, but I want to assure you, it can be done. And the human mind does not suffer. You grow in that kind of wisdom by being humble. Let's say a prayer and close. The Angelus, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. The angel of the Lord, I tell you, we're taking. So then, if you don't mind, I will administer them 2 quizzes. And maybe we can add a few extra minutes so we don't use it up this time, okay? Now, it's almost a quarter of, what if we do this? What if we telescope each of the 2 courses? We normally have 2 hours each, don't we? Is an hour and a half a piece too much, Sister Rita Rose? It'll get us to just around 4 o'clock, okay? Is that fair? We'll take a little break. In other words, if you don't mind, you can take it.
If you can, I think it'd be a shame not to. If you can take it, I'd be ashamed not to.
Well, I appreciate that. Oh, yes. So, let's then take the class in the Catholic faith today first, and I'd like to know how far we got, or did we finish, do you remember, the section we were on? Tradition, weren't we? Do you remember whether I covered the outline on the board? I think I did. Sister Linda?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What I'd like to do, therefore, for the first of our 2 classes in the faith will be to analyze the meaning of sacred doctrine.
I will just abbreviate and what I will do is put the skeleton outline on the board and then develop it as we go along. The manner of communication. Ordinary. And extraordinary. 1, 2, 1, 2. Then the scope of teaching and the church's teaching. Revelation and the premises of Revelation and the consequences of Revelation. Now, with that outline, I will elaborate on the whole of that chart.
The logical sequence, as we have seen Revelation in its two forms as Scripture and tradition, is now to ask, what is sacred doctrine? Everybody is talking about doctrine this and doctrine that. What do we mean? Sacred doctrine is the official teaching of the Catholic Church, taught by the Pope and the bishops in union with him. I will repeat the definition, by the way. Taught by the Pope and the bishops in union with him, and binding on all the faithful to believe and put into practice. What is sacred doctrine? Amen. We're analyzing the meaning of sacred doctrine, and I just expanded on the meaning or the definition. What is sacred doctrine? It is the official teaching of the Catholic Church, taught by the Pope and the bishops in union with him, and binding on all the faithful to believe and put into practice. Every word there, by the way, counts. It is therefore the official teaching. The church can teach, or churchmen can teach, various things, but it is not the official teaching, where the word official means in virtue of the church's duty to teach the faithful. Officium means duty. So is that teaching with the church exercises in virtue of her obligation given to the church by Christ to teach the faithful. Taught by the Pope and the bishops in union with him. I've been teaching theology. This is now my 27th year of teaching theology. I used to have all kinds of other phrases, taught by the hierarchy. It's not clear enough anymore. Taught by the hierarchy in union with the Pope. It's not clear enough anymore. Taught by the Pope, put him first. Because of so many confusions and even positive errors on the subject. Taught by the Pope and the bishops in union with him. That's on the side of the teaching church. And binding on all the faithful. Everyone who is baptized is bound by this teaching. Whether they're Presbyterians, Methodists, Seventh-day Adventists, or Christian Scientists. Or, of course, Catholics, too. Every baptized person is bound objectively by the church's doctrine. To believe and to put into practice, again, almost every year as I teach from different angles, I know of somebody somewhere who wrote a book questioning something, so you put another word in to plug that hole up. To both believe and put into practice. The first object of doctrine is belief, is in the mind. The second object of doctrine is that which a person believes, puts into practice. It is to believe or put into practice. No. Believe and put into practice. Some people are doing things which they no longer believe. That's not enough. To be a Catholic, you must first believe and then also put into practice. So much for the meaning. Now, the manner of communication. How, in other words, does the Church communicate this doctrine to the faithful? She does so, in general, in two ways. By the way, the outline that I have on the board covers literally everything. There's a place for everything the Church teaches somewhere among the slots provided on the board. We distinguish ordinary from extraordinary, not by saying that the ordinary is common or unimportant. No. The word ordinary describes the mode. It says that this is the usual way. Ordinary can be called usual way. This is done in two ways. First, by the Pope or the bishops under the Pope. And this time we put them under the Pope. Through a constant teaching of some doctrine over a long period of time, you notice I'm avoiding the word magisterium all along, which some of you may be quite familiar. The term is technical and is used. Actually, the magisterium is simply the Church's teaching office. That's the magisterium, and that which he teaches. Later on we can say a few words about magisterium, but I think it is much better to understand what we're talking about and then find appropriate technical labels for it. So the first ordinary way that the Church teaches the faithful is by the Pope or the bishops under the Pope, through a constant teaching of some doctrine over a long period of time. Let me analyze what that means. The Church's ordinary magisterium, as it is called, or ordinary teaching office, same thing. Ordinary magisterium means ordinary teaching office. The way she ordinarily, commonly, usually teaches is by the Pope. Now we might put down by the popes, because it implies one pope after another, or the bishops under the Pope. Where?
There is a vertical, as we call it, or historical continuity of the Church's teaching.
Take, for example, contraception. Contraception
had been condemned before about the year 94 A.D. Then, constantly, and we put down 19, what is the date of Hoban Edite? 1968. Okay. So from 94 to 1968, for 19 centuries, contraception has always been condemned, right? By the official teaching church.
Now, does that allow for a few heretical bishops here and there? Oh, yes. One of the less well-known facts of Catholic history is that I don't think there has ever been a period in the church's history when we didn't have heretical bishops. We need to hear that nowadays, don't we? A few years ago, a Dutch bishop, a missionary in India, published a book attacking papal infallibility. Very poorly written book. No logic to it. He just didn't like papal infallibility. Well, being a Dutchman in India, besides, nobody would have bothered reading that book except that he found somebody in the United States to put it into English and published here, in fact, in Illinois, a postbox press in Illinois, and then Time magazine gave several columns of review to that book and told the whole world that this bishop attacked papal infallibility. Well, I looked up his status recently, and I was pleased to see that he has been duly removed from office. And nobody even hears about it. So there are ways of taking care of such things. The simple fact is that it's the Pope's constant teaching or the bishops under the Pope. It is therefore either papal, professedly, or papal in being subordinate to the Pope by the bishops, and it is constant. Now, by constancy, we don't mean that every 10 years or every 15 years another document comes out, but rather that there is no contradictory position. The Church has never taken back. This, by the way, is critical. Constancy of teaching means the Church has never withdrawn what she had taught. All right? Now, one of the scandals in our age is that not all bishops have been that loyal to the Pope. And consequently, given the media, not a few Catholics have become confused as to what sometimes is official teaching. In any case, it is official if it is taught by the Pope or by the bishops united with him. It is constant if the Church has never withdrawn the doctrine. And it is a sufficiently long period of time to indicate that this is indeed the mind of the Church. Secondly, still ordinary, by the bishops under the Pope through their agreement in teaching some doctrine at any given period in the Church's history. So if this is the historical dimension, this is the horizontal. How can we tell, how can we faithful tell what is the Church's official teaching? First, is by historical continuity, as just described. Secondly, if at any given period in the Church's history, even though the doctrine had never come up before, and that doesn't matter, maybe it didn't have occasion to come up before, takes the test tube, maybe, I understand, yesterday's paper, they're starting clinics in the United States. Now, the purpose is not to facilitate the development of, say, a fertilized ovum in those one in several million cases where the human mother cannot take care of it. The real purpose behind it is what is called genetic engineering. And consequently, no matter at what point, in other words, say this is 1978, very well, the Church is teaching at any one time, provided there is agreement among the bishops, and that agreement is somehow approved by the Pope, then again we have the Church's official teaching, and indeed that teaching is infallible. The difference between the first and the second type of ordinary teaching is that in the first case, you must have some historical record of continuity. In the second case, there need be no continuity at all. The Church can just suddenly drop down and teach something. Bishops agree on something. Ipso facto, the faithful are assured, if that is approved by the Pope, this is both the Church's official doctrine and indeed is infallible. Let me tell you, and with all that's happening in the Church today, and the closer you are to the crankcase, the more you realize how serious the situation is. The only reason, under God, why I'm coming here is because I'm so concerned. I'm not sure that all of you realize the gravity of what we're talking about. I don't think so. That either we are clear as to what the Church is teaching officially is, and we are bound to believe it, no matter how many people say the other or say the opposite. Take, for example, the ordination of women. Was it in this class that someone attended? Is she here now? Well, I wasn't there. But that is unquestionably infallible teaching, that only men can be ordained priests. It is, I think I mentioned, didn't I, in Darlington in the Newark Seminary. It was a nun, by the way, dressed in vestments. I just heard yesterday. Who offered Mass with the professor of theology. And nothing's going to happen to that professor. Nothing. And do you know why? Because of their bishop. Pray. Pray. You heard the name, Archbishop Garrity. Beg and plead the Lord to enlighten that man's mind. I seldom talk this way. Gone is the day when we're afraid of saying what needs to be said. The faith of millions is at stake. Millions. And it's being lost and debauched. Now, it's this ordinary teaching that is mainly under attack these days.
Brother? The ordinary teaching without historical continuity, is it sufficient for the Pope to teach this or must be with the bishops or?
No, the first one was by the Pope or the bishops. Ordinary. There are two types of ordinary. The first where the Pope, or popes, it really should be plural. But it needn't be if Pope Leo XIII had a long reign, you see. That would be enough.
The next type, without historical continuity, are we certain of infallibility? Say it's not to credit either, but are we certain of infallibility of its own?
Could the Pope? Yes, of course. Of course. And without calling a council or anything like that, you see. And this is really at stake. There are so many Catholics, and of course, priests and religious, because they are the ones who are the source of most inspiration and most perversion in the Church. It's the ordinary teaching that is mainly challenged, and even without, in other words, ex cathedra. See, once papal infallibility had been defined, we're going to talk about this in a few minutes. Now, this is partly the way it was taught, very amateurishly taught, very poorly was infallibility taught. You're paying the price of years of malformation, as though the only time that we have infallible teaching is on those rare occasions when the Pope speaks ex cathedra. Dear God, we'd have almost nothing infallible in the Church if that was true. Almost nothing. So it's like 99% of the teaching is here. Of sheer doctrines. Now, the extraordinary takes two forms also.
I'm not clear on the second ordinary teaching of the Church, the one that has no continuity at all, when the Pope or the bishop together under the Pope point out.
No. No. Watch it. The second part of the ordinary, that's why be sure that what I said, because I've worked out, in other words, every syllable here counts. You can't just put either or and or bishops or pope, see? The second is by the bishops. The second is by the bishops under the Pope. Through their agreement, the Pope must, go along with it. through their agreement, at any given time in the church's history, on some doctrine, is a sign of its being infallible. Now, the Pope has his way, and that's the ex cathedra. Okay? Now, that, for technical purposes, is called extraordinary. All right? Is that... So the first is by the Pope or the bishops. The second is by the bishops under the Pope. Okay? Through their agreement, this is the second, the ordinary, in teaching some doctrine at any given period in the church's history. As a matter of fact, in 1950, or before 1950, when Pius XII wanted to define Our Lady's Assumption, that's what he did. He didn't have to, but he inquired around among the bishops and found all but unanimous agreement that the Assumption of Our Lady is true, is definable, and is revealed. He found out three things. He didn't have to do it, but he did. Then on top of that, then he made a definition. He might have spared himself the trouble of making a definition. It had to be infallible before it was defined, otherwise it could never have been defined. World, why the church is so terribly concerned about bishops, a single bishop, Bishop Dozier, for example, in Memphis, with his single general absolution to a stadium full of people, scandalized the whole world. And it looked like a lot of people were agreeing with him. He was called in. He was rebuked. And he came back and defended himself. In any case, that's the ordinary, the extraordinary. First, by a general council of the church, when its teaching is approved by the Pope. There is no official teaching of the Catholic Church ever unless somehow the Pope approves. Doesn't exist. Even though 1,000 bishops say it, and 1,000 theologians write books, it is not the Church's teaching. Unless and when and insofar as it's approved by the Pope. Now that is the scandal in the Catholic Church today. That one man under heaven has this kind of authority. So the first form of extraordinary teaching is by a general council, of which there have been so far, how many? General councils of the church. How many? How many? It would be a good idea, by the way. I mean, it's like knowing, you know, what century you're in. Now, how many have there been? Well, you know that we've had 2 Vatican councils. Did you know that? Now, the second Vatican Council was actually the 21st General Council of the Church. Okay. So the councils of the Church, when their teachings are approved by the Pope, and insofar as they're approved by the Pope, that doctrine is the Church's official teaching, and in fact, infallible. Secondly, by the Pope without a general council, teaching the universal church, and then various phrases that we're familiar with, by a definition or ex cathedra, or, as we say, teaching solemnly. So solemn teaching by the Pope, definition by the Pope, ex cathedra teaching by the Pope, those are synonyms. Now, just to briefly summarize these four, whenever either the ordinary or the extraordinary way of teaching is meant to bind all the faithful, that phrase and the definition above, all the faithful, the moment that is the church's mind, she wants to bind all the faithful. By that fact, given these four ways we've described, the doctrine is infallible. How can we tell when a teaching is infallible? From the church's intention to bind the consciences of all the faithful. Undoubtedly, the several solemn definitions of recent pontiffs, of Pius IX defining Mary's Immaculate Conception, of Pius XII defining her Assumption, and the large play, especially the Assumption, got in the press, and then, of course, as I say, the way the doctrine had been taught since the First Vatican Council, I'm afraid, and it's a deep concern, fear, that many Catholics, I would hate to think most Catholics, really believe that that's the only kind of infallible teaching that the Church has. Don't you think so? Well, that is, it's horrendous. There's no adjective you can use to describe how serious that is. Because whether this was the reason for the confusion, or the prophets of error capitalized on the people's ignorance, abortion, contraception, homosexuality, fornication, the indissolubility of marriage, a sacramental marriage consummated by natural intercourse is absolutely indissolvable. I'm now involved in a controversy which involves the Archbishop of a large diocese, a very close friend of mine, who is being divorced by his wife, and she is suing for an annulment in the marriage court. And she had the gall to tell the tribunal that both she and her husband believed the marriage was null and void at the beginning. The husband is absolutely sure that his marriage is valid. He never said that. For the last 6 months, he's been pleading with this archdiocese, would you please change the falsified record? He got nowhere. and in fact our priest advocate is flying into Chicago. If he can make it tomorrow, they'll have about an hour's conversation to further push the case, to bring the Holy See into it. Because in one diocese after another, tribunals are dissolving what in my judgment are certainly valid marriages.